Welcome to this episode of the Elite Advisor Podcast. I'm Sten Morgan. Today, we're going to talk about your mindset and thinking. This is challenging at times for you to be aware of what your mindset is, but it's key for you to raise your awareness and know, is this something that's holding me back or is this something that's fueling me towards my potential? So with Steve Sandusky today, we're going to unpack mindset. Depending on what stage of your career you're in, what should you be focusing on? Because if you can change your mindset and think bigger, it'll impact everything in your business. Let's get started. Steve, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to see you. We were talking off camera a little bit, and you recently moved to Portland, Oregon, where I grew up.
Yeah, we moved here a little over a year and a half or so ago, and got a couple kids that live in this area, and our oldest daughter out here had our first grandchild. So my wife basically said, I'm going out west. We were living in Wisconsin for a long time, and so here we are. Yeah, it's been good and enjoying the great outdoors here and the great Pinot Noirs in the Willamette Valley. So it's been all good.
So I grew up outside of Eugene, and I went to school outside of Portland in the Willamette Valley. And I didn't know growing up that like that was good wine until I left. And I was like, actually, that was some of the best wine.
It was
kind of wasted on me in my 20s. But
Yeah. I'm sure you can appreciate it now. So we're enjoying it out here and being close to a couple of our kids.
That's great. What work-wise these days, what's getting you the most excited?
It's good. I've got, I'm still coaching. So I've got a heavy load of coaching clients. I've got several podcasts that I'm hosting. One of which is the Barron's Advisor Podcast, which is a lot of fun and really gets some very interesting guests and not just people in the financial services industry. So I just wrapped up a series on geopolitics. So I interviewed four folks that are experts in the area of geopolitics, and with everything going on in the world and the markets, I thought that would be a fun topic. So it was a lot of fun to research and learn a lot about that. So yeah, really enjoying that.
Nice. Well, today I want to unpack mindset for advisors. Our framework that we coach on at EAN is what we call our RESIST framework. And the T is thinking or mindset. And I have found, I'd love your opinion on this, that successful advisors come from all walks of life, have different stories of growing business. Some said, hey, I came from a family that owned companies and I just kept doing what we were doing. And others are like, I had no experience, no family help per se, and was able to grow it from scratch. But there is consistency in a growth mindset, somewhat of a risk taker. So when you think about a mindset when it comes to advisors, what has been your experience with that and how do you approach it as a coach?
Yeah, well, I'd say several things. So one is I like to start with a question, which is, if you had no fear, would you be running your business? Would you be living your life exactly the way you are today? And so fear oftentimes is an issue that people have to deal with. And so, for example, when it comes to mindset, a fearful person is going to think, oh, markets are down, I need to cut costs. Whereas a fearless mindset is, hey, I'm just going to grow revenue. Like, here's a great opportunity. Another example might be a fearful mindset is focused on, hey, I want to be a generalist. I want to like work with anybody that wants to work with me. I'm a little scared of losing business. Whereas a fearless person is going to say, hey, I'm going to specialize. I'm going to identify exactly who my ideal client is, and I'm going to go after that. And I'm not going to worry about if I miss out business over here for someone that has $1 million or $2 million because they're not my market. You know, there's plenty of people in my market. So I think this idea of thinking about fear and what is causing that fear, what's behind that fear, is certainly one key to think about here.
I found myself recently asking the question, like, what's the most courageous thing you've done in your business? Like, it's the thing you're avoiding, but if you did it, you knew it would help you. And I find a lot of advisors have a general idea of what the brave path would be. What is the obstacle? Is it just limiting beliefs, you know, of the unknown? As you coach advisors, I'm sure some are like aware, like, Steve, I believe everything you're saying, but I can't seem to take action on it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reality is that as human beings, we rise to our level of comfort. Okay. And so the average person becomes average, right? Because they rise to their level of comfort and then they sort of stop because things are good. And then you look at, okay, well, who are the people that go beyond the other side of the comfort level? And so those are the people who have found motivation on the other side of their comfort level. And the reality is that I firmly believe that every person, every financial advisor can achieve whatever level of success that they want as long as their desire is as strong as their dream. And so I'd ask that question, you know, does your desire match your dream? And for those folks that are at, you know, the billion or multi-billion in assets under management, those advisors that are speaking at the conferences, that are getting written up in the magazines, that are getting the awards, the reality is they simply want it more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my experience, it's been, you know, any advisor that's reasonably successful, they've got the tools that they need to be dramatically more successful if they want to. So they've just got to figure out, you know, where's that motivation on the other side of their comfort zone? And it's not that everybody has to have that. You may be fine saying, hey, I like my life. I like my mix between the work that I do and time with family or travel or other interests that I have. And that's great. So, you know, when I coach folks, I'm not there to say, grow, grow, grow. I'm there to help you figure out what is it that you want. And then let's figure out the best path to get you there in the fastest way possible with the least amount of obstacles.
What do you find is the percentage of opportunity or growth available just if they start like working more efficiently? Like, I'm not going to ask you to work weekends. I'm not going to ask you to come in early. Like, I'm not going to ask you to change everything, kind of that 10X thinking versus 2X. Does everyone listening right now have some amount of potential that they can unlock without dramatic change, or does it require kind of like an upheaval?
Well, I think maybe what you're talking about there is the difference between incremental growth versus exponential growth. And yeah, we can always get better. And one of the other ideas that I like to talk about and think about as a concept and even as a mindset is this idea of mastery. And some people might say that Tiger Woods is or was a master at golf, or Michael Jordan is or was a master at basketball. My feeling is, the way that I think about mastery is, no one is a master at anything. Because the reality is, we can always get better. We can always improve. And so how that might relate to an advisor is, if you have a mastery mindset, which is, I want to continue to get a little bit better each day, you can absolutely improve your business. I mean, a simple thing might be referrals, right? Go back to the fearful versus fearless. You know, a lot of advisors are like, well, I get referrals. I don't really ask for referrals. I feel a little awkward trying to have an introduction type conversation. But if you just take a little step, if you put a plan in place, if you have some simple analogies, or if you keep your eyes and ears open for opportunities, when you're, I mean, a simple one is, your client is giving you a glowing testimonial. They're saying like, what a great job you're doing for them. There's a perfect opportunity to have a conversation about them making some introductions for folks that want to get the same experience that your client in front of you just described that they're having with you. So just little simple things like that can definitely have a significant improvement in your business without trying to think exponentially.
When you start coaching an advisor, is there a process you put them through to like increase their awareness? Because I work with a lot of advisors, and at times they think they're doing great, especially if it's like, hey, my personal income is comfortable. Like, that's the main measure. Where when I work with like top advisors, I'm like, money is no longer their primary measure of them having an impact or doing a good job as an entrepreneur. How do you raise somebody's awareness to like, oh, wow, my mindset is flawed. I'm holding myself back? Because I do think there's a lack of awareness. Most advisors would defend themselves as opposed to say, man, I know I'm not even aware of my potential yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also have another belief that as human beings, we should always be growing. But I want to clarify what I mean by that. What I don't mean is we should always be growing our income, or we should always be growing our business. Now, for some people, that's what they want to do, and that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it's like, think about the different aspects of your life. You've got your professional life. You've got your personal life. You've got other passions and hobbies and interests that you have. You've got legacy. You've got this idea of going from success to significance. And so I would challenge a client to think about, at this stage of your life, and you think about what's important to you at this stage in your life, where do you want to be growing? And for some people, they may feel like, hey, I've done what I wanted to do on the business side. now I want to move to this other area that may not be business related. And so I think we all need to have something that we're passionate about and that gives us a reason to go to bed at night, looking forward to getting up in the morning. And so that's, you know, for advisors that are sort of in that mode, you know, that would be the approach that I would take, is just help them think about, at this stage, what's the aspect of your life that you want to be growing in? If it's not business, that's fine. I'm not here to judge. You know, I'm here to help you figure that out and then help you move forward in that area that you want to grow in.
So if we can help everybody listening answer this question for themselves, there's different seasons in this business. And I think I want to hold space for all of us that started from nothing and you're like, I just have to survive. Like it is, you know, get clients, increase my revenue because I just have to worry about paying rent and surviving in this business. And then hopefully you enter a season where you're like, I don't have to worry about the basic fundamental needs anymore. I can think about growing my business and how do I be a better leader. And then you eventually enter where you're like, hey, I've arrived. I've now passed my business where I'm thinking about succession. So if we can maybe work our way through those stages and say, okay, if you're a new advisor or younger in the business, what would you say to them different from maybe the person that's thinking more legacy? They are kind of in this grind out season.
You got to work hard. I mean, it's, the reality is you got to work hard. There's really no getting around that. But of course, you got to work smart. And I don't want that to sound like a cliche, but the reality is it's true. You got to work hard and you got to work smart. I also think, and that maybe this is a contrarian opinion, but I do think it's actually easier today to start out and build a business as an advisor than it was 30 or 40 years ago. 30 or 40 years ago, you didn't have the internet. Basically, you were cold calling on a telephone and you were cold walking. You were going out. You were knocking on doors like the Edward Jones folks do. So, you know, it was kind of pretty limited in terms of what you could actually do to build your business. And it was all a transaction business. It was like, eat what you kill. It's like, if I don't make a trade today, if I don't make a transaction, if I don't get a commission, I don't eat. Whereas today, with the AUM model and the recurring revenue model, that coupled with we have the internet and we have all the digital things that we can do today. And you can work with anybody around the country, around the world for that matter. So in one respect, I do think it's actually easier to build a business today for those who are interested in taking advantage of the technology that we have today, who have that open mind and who want to get out of their comfort zone. So I'd say work hard, work smart. Take full advantage of the internet that we, you know, the tools that we have available from a digital standpoint. And of course, you know, typically you're going to, you know, work for another advisory firm. And a lot of times you've got the senior advisor that has too many clients. They want to pass them off to the newer advisor. So I think there's a lot more ways today for a newer advisor to get started and be successful.
And when I look back to when I started in the business, I wish I would have known that there was kind of multiple paths. I think I just started copying the people around me and I did rely on like hard work. Like if I just outwork everybody else, it is true to some degree that enough activity, you will eventually probably be successful. But to me, that seemed like this really long, slow path. It wasn't that exciting as a young advisor. And so one thing we teach a lot of advisors now is this average versus elite mindset, meaning there's an average path. And to your point of working smarter, There's also an elite path that's just maybe more challenging and it requires you to think differently versus maybe copying everybody around you. How would you, if you were, you know, a young advisor again, how would you try to increase your awareness of there's the shortcut path, which is still just as challenging, but gets you there faster, or there's kind of the industry average quantity of activity is the path to success?
Well, let me turn that back on you. So what are you describing as the shortcut path?
To me, and it's what we coach on, is it's elite behavior. And we say you have to iterate to think elite, meaning your first idea is probably not your best one. So if you come into this business and someone says, hey, the way to be successful is to call the 200 people that you know the most, that you're going to rely on the relationship to get the client. So it's not really a reflection of your qualities as an advisor, your sales skills. It's like relationship based. To me, that's average. It's something and it could be challenging. Or you say, hey, I'm going to go learn something of value for a specific group of people and I'm going to get really good at presenting that idea and I'm going to get their business you know, I'm going to overcome the age bias because I'm going to be so good at communicating and this idea that I know brings value to them. And then I'm going to start my reputation as an advisor as like, wow, that person brings value right away. Not, hey, I just happen to know Jimmy and I'm going to do him a favor. And so even on day one, I think there's a way of approaching the business just a challenging, but it's like, well, this one probably gets me to where I want to be faster than the average path.
Well, I totally agree with that. So I think we're saying the same thing. So when I talk about working smart, it's like that would be what you just described there would be a perfect example. I mentioned earlier about the generalist versus the specialist where, well, the fearful person wants to be a generalist. It's like, hey, I want to call 200 people or I want to, you know, just take on anybody that can fog a mirror, you know, the old fog a mirror test. Whereas, you know, the fearless person says, hey, I want to specialize. I want to identify who my ideal clients are. I want to become an expert in solving the problem of those people. I want to be in the top 10% of advisors in this particular area of solving this problem. And if you're like at the top, you know, recognized as one of the top advisors in this particular area, you're always going to have plenty of business because it's not like we're looking for thousands of clients. And so, yeah, you know, being a specialist, starting out that I think is great. Adding value, of course, we've got to make sure that we're not just out there trying to sell everybody and you know, do business with me. It's like, no, you got to deliver a lot of value first before people are going to be interested in you. You know, with the internet, with blogging, with YouTube, I mean, we've got all these different ways to display our expertise. So you've got to give before you're going to get. And as you start doing that, people are going to start realizing, hey, this person knows what they're talking about. Maybe I need to talk to them.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you. Yeah, I love the fear versus fearless, because I do think there's an element of, hey, if you're a 24-year-old advisor that you don't think you're allowed to do certain things, which is like be an authority on anything or speak confidently on anything, you're almost allowing these unseen forces to hold you back. You know, what we call resistance is the head trash around, you know, there's no reason you can't be a 25-year-old expert on Social Security planning, or you just have to study really hard. And a lot of times if you read two or three books on something, you probably already know more than most people out there on it. So I love the idea of if you are a young advisor listening, like just the awareness of, is there a better path to get where I want to go faster? That doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean maybe even understand it fully, but I wish somebody would stop me when I entered the business on the insurance side and said, hey, Sten, just so you know, you could go this way. The momentum of the industry is going to probably take you this way. And if you work hard enough and survive, you'll be successful. But just so you know, there's this other path. Equally, if not more challenging, but more upside faster. I just wish I would have known sooner that I had a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, we always have a choice, right? We can always choose how we're going to respond to a particular situation. And we always have the ability to be curious. And one of the other things I like to talk about is this idea of ABC. And no, it doesn't stand for always be closing. It stands
for a great movie.
Yeah. It stands for always be curious. And so I think when we talk about mindset, I think having a curious mindset is also a critical trait or characteristic of the most successful people. And, you know, that's one of the things that I cultivate, and it's not something that I try to do. I think it's just something that is natural to me because I love to learn. And so, maybe to my detriment, to some respects, I'm always trying to, you know, learn new things and go down rabbit holes, but, it's something that I enjoy. But I also think, this idea, you know, you talk about a 24-year-old, I think it's important to realize that this idea of the self-limiting beliefs, well, I'm only 24 years old and I can't work with people who are old enough to be my dad or my grandpa. Okay. Well, if you tell yourself that, then that's going to become your reality. And the person that you're talking to is going to pick up on that. Just like a dog can sense when the person in front of them is scared of the dog, The dog is going to sense that. And so if you go into it thinking, I wonder if they're going to think I'm their son or their grandson, and they're not going to give me the respect that I think I deserve because I'm an expert in Social Security planning or retirement income planning. Well, if that's what you're thinking, you're going to give that off and they're going to pick up on that, and it's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So to your point, I think if you shift that and say, hey, I've done the work, I may only be 24 years old, but I put in more hours in my, you know, first 24 years than this other person who's 50 years old and thinks they're a Social Security expert. So it's like, what are you telling yourself? And have you done the work to back that up? So I'm not a fan of fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a fan of do the hard work and be legitimate about it.
I love that. So now if we pivot and we're talking to the comfortable / plateauing advisor, to where if now it's still just their personal income is their success, like they've arrived, their bills are paid, they have money to take nice trips. How do we talk to the mindset at that stage of the business?
Yeah. So, you know, that's exactly a question that I've asked a lot of really successful advisors. And I basically say to them, you could have stopped working years ago because you've got plenty of money to live on. So what is it that keeps you going long after your financial needs are met? And more times than not, the answer is that now it's really about impact. It's about significance. It's not, I'm sure ego's part of it. They don't necessarily say that, but I mean, the reality is anybody that reaches a high level of success, there's a certain amount of ego gratification in that. So I don't think we can deny that. But this idea of impact, I think, is also critically important, because they'll say, hey, you know, if I build this business and maybe we have 1,000 clients whose lives that we can change pretty dramatically, that's great. But what if we change 10,000 lives? What if we change 50,000 lives? And so that's when they start thinking about, oh my gosh, we do such a great job for our clients. What if we could double, triple, or 10x the number of people that are going to get this kind of experience? What kind of ripple effect is that going to have on our local community, our broader community, on society? And so I think they start thinking much bigger around that, this idea of impact. And so I think for many folks, impact is what keeps them motivated long after they've got all the money they'll ever need.
Yeah. I've noticed, as I've personally gone through some of those seasons, there was an element of the things that drove me to be successful in business maybe are not the most healthy and sustainable long-term. And in my 30s, I had to kind of step back and say, okay, what's the impact I want to have? And it led me down a path of realizing, okay, maybe the internal drivers, and I remember a therapist saying this years ago at this meeting I was at, they were like, a lot of times our trauma helps us look really good in business, but it's not the thing we want to carry with us forever. Where there has to be a shift almost in motivation, but also I've seen with a lot of even my clients and business owners that are my age, that's like kind of coming out of the fog of war a little bit and being like, okay, how can I have impact? But maybe my motivation of not forgetting what's important, family balance, I'm now trying to hold both of those things at once. And it's causing me to kind of shift the way I view things, because what I did worked and got me attention, but I don't think it's maybe the person I want to keep being for the next 40 years.
Yeah, you mentioned the word trauma. And what I have also found, and I've worked with, like you, I've worked with a lot of really successful people. And in many cases, not every case, but in many cases, there is some traumatic thing back in their early years that really was the fuel for their motivation to work really hard. Because as I mentioned earlier, this idea of the comfort zone, we all rise to our level of comfort, and unless there's some additional fuel, some additional impetus that is causing you to keep going long past the point of your level of comfort, like, what is that? I mean, it could be, you know, I could never be good enough for my dad. And so I'm continuing, you know, into my 50s and 60s, trying to be a success and show to my dad that I was, you know, I could be the success that you didn't think I could be when I was a kid. I was never good enough, you know? So what is that? And to your point, yeah, that can get you really successful, but is that really, like, you know, there's sort of good fear and bad fear. You know, good fear is, you know, the butterflies that I get before I give a presentation. The bad fear is the debilitating fear when I'm puking my guts, you know, before a presentation. So same thing here. Like, you know, there's sort of good fuel and there's bad fuel. you know, and the bad fuel can get you to a point, but you don't want to continue using bad fuel because eventually it's going to be destructive and you're going to crap out.
Yeah. And for me, it was the idea, like I just got these hits of like, hey, you're good enough, you know, and I needed that reinforcement based on my story. And it was like, hey, every client win, every business success, every award, speaking event. But then kind of unpacking that, my fear was like, I'm going to lose my edge. If I kind of tame that fire or like do it in a healthier way. Unfortunately, I've realized like you almost come out with like this calm intensity and confidence when you're not trying to impress everybody else and you're doing it for the right reason, that I had to go through it, even though people were telling, to come out the other side and really understand like, no, I'm just as committed to impact. It just doesn't feel like I'm carrying 100-pound weight around with me all the time while I do it.
Yeah, I want to tell you, I'll try to make this a quick story about doing it for the right reason. So way back when I was in grad school, I became friendly with another guy, and this was the MBA program. He had no business background before he joined the MBA program. He was a really high level musician for like a symphony or an orchestra. So one day we're in the same accounting class. We took a test. The teacher took the midterm. The teacher writes the scores on the board, and then he hands everyone their test back. And then he walks back to the board. And I mean, there must have been 100 people in this room. And then he puts the people's names next to the score. And whoa. My buddy, you know, who had no business background, and here I got an undergrad in finance. I worked in business for a Fortune 50 company. I thought I knew what I was doing. He was freaking number one. Wow. And I wasn't on the board. And I'm like, what the heck? This is not right. And so I made a decision literally at that moment. I said, okay, I'm going to bust my ass. I'm going to get the top score for the final. And the professor's going to put my name, you know, next to that top score when it comes to the final. So, you know, I work really hard, study hard, take the final. I think I do pretty good. We come back, teacher puts the scores up on the board. He walks around, hands everybody their tests. I turn mine over. I look at my score. It was like, I don't know, 90, 95 or 97 or something. And I look up there and I'm like, that's the number one score. And I'm just like a peacock. I'm like, this is going to be so cool. He's going to put my name up there. He walks up there. He didn't write anybody's name. He just started talking. And I'm like, put the names up there, you idiot. I want to see my name up there. And so, you know, it taught me an important lesson, which is I had, you know, the motivation, right, to like, I wanted to get the best score because I wanted to beat my buddy here. But it was the wrong motivation. It was the wrong fuel. Okay. But it still got me there. But it was a very, very hollow victory because I was doing it because I wanted to see my name up there and I wanted everybody to know how smart I was about accounting, and it didn't happen. So it's like, okay, you know, it's going to be a much better victory if I do it for the right reason and not just because I wanted to beat this guy or this gal over there.
Yeah. No, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I think that taps into a lot of us of, yeah, the recognition element of it. And it can work. I think that's a lot of stuff I see with advisors. Like, you can go this way and it could work kind of maybe eventually. Or the curiosity piece, is there a healthier, sustainable way to go about this? And I know there's things in life people have tried to tell me. And so there's people listening right now that were like, hey, get ahead of this thing so life doesn't kind of hit you with it and force you to go through it and maybe even drag it out. But yeah, I think that's an important lesson. So before we wrap up, if we can talk to, because this is a trend I'm hearing more and more about, yep, the average advisor age. There's this issue. I've talked to some really big firms and they're like, we our senior advisors, we're having a hard time finding up and coming talent to kind of matchmake and help them with succession. So how would you talk to successful advisor? They've made the shift to some degree from personal income to impact, but now they're saying, you know, I'm just going to kind of ride this thing out and let my books kind of slowly dwindle. Or how do I take a different, maybe healthier mindset towards legacy or impact in the last 5 to 10 years of my business?
Yeah. What I would say from a mindset standpoint is to ask yourself, are you the owner of your business or are you an investor in your business? So think about this for a second. So if you're the owner of the business, what that basically means is, hey, I got to run this thing. I got to show up. I got to be the president, or I got to be the CEO. I got to manage these people. I got to hire these people. I got to make sure we got systems in place. I'm probably the big rainmaker. I probably am meeting with the biggest clients. And so like, I'm the business, so to speak, and my identity is wrapped up into the business. Whereas if you take, I'm an investor in my business approach, you're sort of thinking like Warren Buffett does. So Warren Buffett owns, you know, either outright or big chunks of lots of different companies, but he doesn't run any of those companies. He sits in Omaha, my hometown, and he's making capital allocation decisions. He's deciding the big picture things, but he's not worrying about who's hired or who got fired. He's not worried about succession. Well, he is worried about succession planning for his own, but not so much for the other people at the, that are running his businesses. So I think if you take that approach of moving from an owner of your business to an investor in your business, that will shift how you think about what your role is, what your identity is, and you know what the legacy of the business is. And so I think that, and I think there's a lot to explore in that concept. And so I'll sort of leave that as a challenge to the listeners. Is what would that mean to you, shifting from an owner of your business to an investor in your business?
You know, what comes to my mind as I hear you say it is like the ability to hire and lead, because I don't think you can become an investor as a solo practitioner. It's like there's some element of like I need other people to reach that potential for myself. Mm-hmm. And that's a big undertaking as well. You know, I have so many advisors are overworked and they know it, not living in their superpower. And they know they need help, but for some reason they're not venturing into that arena. Because I know for me, it's an arena. I didn't do it perfect, not a great hire, really painful for the company, turnover. Like there's some element of like there's best practices, but learning to attract the right people, interview well, onboard them well, and then encourage and retain them long term. I mean, that's a whole skill set that when I became an advisor, I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like I'm a sales guy that's going to grow a business, and I had to venture into this whole new realm of like, wow, building a team, team events outside of the office, like all this whole skill set before I could even imagine someday not like being an overworked employee of myself.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that also is a function of what do you want your career to be? So do you want to be an entrepreneur and run your own company? If so, you have to do all the things that you just described. Or do you say, hey, I just love to sell. I love to be in relationship with my clients. I love to do financial planning and investment management. All I want to do is just meet with clients and prospects all day long. If that's the case, then you should be working for someone else, most likely, if you don't want to deal with all the business stuff. So I think that clearly is a fundamental first decision you have to make. Do I want to be an employee in somebody else's company so I can just do the stuff I want to do? Or do I want to be an entrepreneur, business owner, and you know, run my own deal? So obviously those are two very fundamental questions that you have to ask early on. And it doesn't mean that if you start out as an employee, you have to be one for the rest of your career. I mean, obviously you can, and that was me. I mean, I was an employee for a long time. You know, it wasn't really until I turned 50 that I became an entrepreneur. So yeah, it's not like you have to pick one path and stay that way the rest of your life.
Yeah, I love this topic. Just mainly because of my personal story and what I had to go through mindset thinking wise to unlock different kind of versions of myself in the career. But I would say for everybody listening, I think a step one would be like raise your awareness to kind of where you are with your mindset and thinking. And I know for me, part of that is like I have to ask for feedback because you're trapped in your head and you see the world one way. So surround yourself with people you want to be like and welcome feedback, and hopefully you're healthy enough to receive it and sit in it and not argue with it. But what would you say is, you know, when it comes to mindset and thinking for everybody listening, how would you challenge them?
Well, I want to two points to what you just said there. So one is about feedback. And I think that is really critical from the standpoint of, I remember when I was working at Peak with Ron Carson, and he and I would travel all over the country, and we would do these day long, basically dog and pony shows. And at the end of each one, we'd have them fill out a feedback form. And I was always like, oh, I don't want to read the feedback because Ron's a phenomenal speaker, and I'm not nearly as good of a speaker as Ron. And he'd always get higher marks than I would. And I'm like, I don't know that I even want to read it, but it's like I would force myself to read that because it's like the only way I'm going to get better is if I have a good relationship with feedback. And if I, you know, get my ego out of it and look at this as, hey, they're giving feedback because they want Steve to be a better speaker. Or maybe they tell me things I did well and I could do more of that. So if you improve your relationship to feedback, I think that's going to help you become better over time. So I think that's a key thing.
Yeah. If any advisor listening, young advisors, I would encourage you to go to your senior advisor or your boss soon and ask for a meeting and say, how can I get better? Not very many people do that. And whenever someone has asked me that, it's rare. It's so refreshing because it's like, it's not me having to force it in a quarterly review. It's you asking for it. And if you got in the habit of consistently asking for, hey, how can I get better? Where do you see that I can, you know, focus better, more? You'd be surprised how few people I find are doing that actively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the second point I want to make about what you said there was this idea of like, who do you surround yourself with? And we've all heard that idea that, you know, you become the kind of person, you know, the five people that you spend the most time around with, you know, or some variation of that. And I think that's true. But I also want to caution people because in our industry, we are very focused on best practices. We're very focused on benchmarking. We're very focused on looking at who the top advisors are. And well, let's just sort of emulate, let's sort of copy what it is that they're doing. And maybe that's a shortcut to success. And it is to some extent. I mean, because they've gone through the school of hard knocks and they've figured out what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But there's a problem with that. And the problem with that is, you know, let's think about, get this visual of an iceberg in the middle of an ocean. Okay. So we've all seen that visual. We've seen that little part of the iceberg sticking above the water. And then below the water, we've got the huge part of the iceberg. Okay. Well, when we're trying to do best practices or we're trying to copy what a top advisor does, all we're seeing is the tip of that iceberg. We're seeing the outcome of what that person has done for the previous 20 years to get to the point where they can do the top of the iceberg thing that is successful. And if all we try and do is do that, we've lost the whole foundation that that advisor did to get to that point. And so when the slightest thing is different, that advisor who spent 20 years getting to the tip of the iceberg, they know how to handle it. They know how to deal with it. They know how to tweak. They know how to pivot. They know how to iterate. But the other advisor who just says, oh, this advisor is doing webinars or this advisor is doing this type of, you know, high-end wine tasting event with a sommelier there. So I'm just going to do that. Well, no, you're not going to have anywhere near the success with that thing if you've not done the work that gets there. So I would always caution people, yes, let's learn from top advisors. Let's learn from best practices. Let's learn from benchmarking. But at the end of the day, if all you're going to do is try and copy other people, you're just going to become a second-rate version of them instead of a first-class version of yourself. So I want you to make sure that you think about, I'm a unique person. I'm not Sten Morgan. I'm not Steve Sandusky. You know, I'm, you know, my unique person. And so I want to figure out, what is it about me that makes me unique that will enable me to build my business in a way that's going to be successful because of me, not because I've copied some other person. So, you know, let's just not be a business of copycats. You know, rather than being the one who's copying other people, you want to be the one who other people are trying to copy you.
That's great. That's great. Word of caution and challenge. So yeah, it's a good word. All right, my friend, this is fun. I know we can keep going for a long time, but we will sign off for this time and hopefully get back together soon.
Sounds good, Sten. Appreciate being on the show.
See you soon.